Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Good morning. Welcome to Medicine on Call. I have a really special guest on again, and I'm so happy that he's able to spend time with us, Mr. Joseph Meyer. I don't know what you guys are thinking out there, but every time I turn on the news or read anything on the internet, the economy is just, it's like a wild west out there, but nothing's being spoken about. And I wanted Mr. Myers to come back on and educate us on really what's going on and how we can avoid being a victim in this economy, because whatever's going on is not what they say is going on. And I want to get into it quickly, but before I do, I want to introduce or have Joseph introduce himself to you. So Joe, thanks again for coming on. I really appreciate your time.
Good morning, Elena. Thank you on Medicine on Call for having me as your guest this morning. Always an extreme pleasure to visit with you and your listening audience. Thank you, Elena.
Oh, you're welcome. Tell us, how long have you been in the finance game?
I started investing in 1966 as a 19-year-old, and then upon returning from Vietnam in 1969, I decided I wanted to work on Wall Street. And I was able to become a licensed broker in the securities industry in 1972. And I've worked in the industry in various capacities ever since.
And I know that you've seen everything in terms of the up and down of the stock market. And, you know, I'm not an investor personally, but I want for people like myself who don't invest, when they give you these numbers on TV, do they really apply to everybody or just the people who are playing the stock market? Does it matter for the average person what's going on?
Well, I think that's an excellent question, and how I'll answer it is there was a time when the stock market used to be a true economic barometer, and it used to reflect certainly the underpinnings of an economy and what was truly going on. Sadly, it hasn't represented that fact now in many, many years. In fact, when you look at the stock market and you look at the economy, you have such a wide divergence, it's pretty hard to believe that this market, as it's continuing to rise, is really reflective in the economy improving, sadly.
Well, how did it get disconnected? What was the driving force behind that?
Well, I think when you go back and you look at globalization and you look at the impact that it's had on all the economies of the world, and I'm sure you'll agree we've been in a global economy now for a long, long time. So markets are not truly reflective of solely what's going on here in the U.S. They're reflective of what's going on internationally on a much larger scale. I think people are very reluctant to want to accept that hard fact. It's reality.
Well, I think we've had a lot of preaching to us about how awesome globalization is and, you know, open markets, open societies, etc. But, you know, my impression is we've ceded our economic power to global interests, and because of that, our interests are not represented. And is that a proper way to see it? I mean, I understand that you have to have someone to trade with, you have to have someone who can afford your product, but do you have to lose your manufacturing in the process? Do you have to lower the standard of your workers in the process in order to do that?
Well, you know, when you look at globalization and you look at what it's done here in the U.S. and the manufacturing base, which has been eroded over many decades, and I think it's a sad state of affairs when Walmart now is the largest employer in 19 states. Did you know that?
No, I didn't. 19.
Walmart is the largest employer in 19 states. I'll name the states for you. Alabama, Arizona, Arkansas, Florida, Georgia, Illinois, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi, Missouri, Montana, Ohio, Oklahoma, South Carolina, Tennessee, Texas, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming. Do you know what state of the 19 has the largest number of employees working in Walmart? Take a guess.
Alabama?
Texas.
Texas, okay.
You know what state has the least number of employees working for Walmart? Take a guess on that one.
I don't know.
Wyoming.
Oh, yeah, okay, that makes sense. Well, then it goes, it's the same playbook then, where you have a corporate entity that becomes all-powerful. So you're describing it in, you know, a typical marketplace, but I'm seeing that on the healthcare side, where you have the insurance companies that have Pac-Maned the major commercial versions of it, Pac-Maning everything else. So now there's only five large insurance companies left.
Very true.
And now they're pulling out of Obamacare. So in some states, you have zero in an exchange, maybe one. So they're driving the market in a different, in the same way. I mean, it's monopoly, right? So whoever has the power controls the purse strings.
Well, I think another very interesting statistic is the total number of U.S. states where welfare pays more than an $8 per hour job. Take a guess on that one.
I don't know. I would say one of the poor economic states, you know, or the Deep South, maybe Mississippi, Alabama.
Well, the total number of U.S. states where welfare pays more than an $8 per hour job is 39.
39 states?
The number of U.S. states where welfare pays more than a $12 per hour job is 6. And the number of U.S. states where welfare pays more than the average salary of a U.S. teacher is 8.
Okay, I'm going to take a wild stab at this one. I bet you the ones that are paying the most are the ones with the maybe something like California or New York, where they're having a ton of people come in, immigrant population and
you're
open borders.
Right.
Okay, figure that one. I mean, ultimately, it pays you more to do nothing than it does to work these days in these states. That's what you're saying.
Well, I think when you take a look at the economy, there's really 10 things that I think really tell the story, and I'd like to go through them one at a time with you and your listening audience.
Please do.
Number one, 56% of all Americans now have subprime credit. What does that say about the state of the economy as a whole? Number two, 60% of all new jobs created since the last recession are entry-level positions paying less than $13 per hour. Number three, major retailers are now closing stores at an alarming rate. Consumers are now over $11 trillion in debt, and it's worsening as we speak. Four, home mortgage applications now at a level last seen over 20 years ago. Five, auto dealers and bank branches and retail stores are now closing around poor economic areas, and this continues to worsen. Six, 50% of all student loans at 347 universities and vocational schools are now defaulting. Seven, in 1994, less than half of college students left school with a student loan, but today over 70% of all graduating students are leaving college deeply in debt. Student loan debt, Elena, as you know, now totals over $1.2 billion. Seven, small business ownership now at the lowest level that's ever been recorded. Number eight, and I know you'll find this one very interesting, suicide has now actively surpassed car accidents as the number one cause of death or injury in the United States. Nine, since 2008, our national debt has increased by $10 trillion. In 1980, and again, I know you know this statistic, our national debt totaled less than $1 trillion. And lastly, in number 10, child poverty rate was 15% in America in 2008. It has now risen to the level of 22% in 2016. This is the first time since 1965 that the poverty level has stayed above 15% for three consecutive years. Those are the 10 things that I think tell you everything you need to know about the state of the economy. You agree?
Oh, absolutely. And they're there's no way to...
It's what people don't know. You know, people think they know because they read papers and they watch the news on TV what's mm-hmm. really happening. It couldn't be more the opposite of that. You know, we're told in this society we live in what makes us feel good. We're not told the reality of what is happening and why and what it means. And as I've often said, what we can and should be doing about it.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. But it's
We have to think as individuals, and we have to think of ourselves, and we have to think of what we can and should be doing to give ourselves and our family a better life. You know, we cannot depend on somebody doing for us what we need to be doing for ourselves.
I couldn't say it better. It's all about personal responsibility.
But I think we have to get back to responsibility. We have to get back to accountability. We have to get back to the truth. We have to get back to when people's character and their honesty and their integrity had value. And we look at society, and in my humble opinion, for what it's worth, we look at people today and we don't think those character traits matter. And I think they matter, and I'm sure you'll agree now more than ever.
I absolutely agree.
You know, the bigger question I think you and I have is, what is it going to take to bring us back to those values? Well, I wish I had the answer to that. Maybe you do.
Well, I think you've hit on the most important thing. It's every individual examining them, being honest with themselves, and sacrificing something.
Well, I think if you can look in the mirror and lie to yourself and feel good about it, then you have the problem.
I agree. Or blame someone else for it.
If we're going to change society, if we're going to change the world, if we're going to make this a better country for us all, don't you think we have to start out by being at least honest with ourselves?
I think you're right. I think I absolutely agree with you. And you know, this started, you described something that started years and years ago, and it was living above your means and trying to keep up with your neighbor and, you know, doing things that you knew you couldn't afford, but you were going to do it anyway. I think that's how this all begins.
Well, you know, I had someone many, many years ago when I was a young person starting out on Wall Street, and they said to me something that I never forgot. They said, never forget the only person you have to impress in life and the only one you have to really please in life at the end of the day is yourself. Don't get caught up in what doesn't matter and keep your focus on what truly does matter. And I think we've gotten away from that as well.
I mean, is it pop culture that's done it in your opinion, or is it just the pursuit of money, you know, as the thing that makes you worthy or makes you popular or somehow makes you better? It's something outside
of
yourself.
I think the answer to that question, money does funny things and many things to different people. Some people can handle money and handle it very well, and others cannot. You know, I've always said through my career, the dollars never told me what to do. You know, I've never lived just to make a lot of money. True, we all need it, and it's important. And, you know, unfortunately, society values, you know, an individual by how much they have. But I think we have to take a look at who we are as a person, what we're contributing to society, and we have to ask ourselves at the end of the day, are we and can we truly make a difference? And I think that's the question each and every one of us has to answer, and answer honestly and answer individually.
Well, I want listeners to think about that while we take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call. Welcome back to Medicine on Call. Again, I think we're having a really important conversation with economist Joseph Meyer, and one that he just described that is under the radar. This is the foundation of what's going on. When you hear the politicians talk about how we need to double down on this pathway that we're on, how we're in the best economy ever and recession is over, I mean, it's complete doublespeak. I mean, you might as well reading 1984. It's complete nonsense. I'm living it. I know that in the next month or so, after the elections, unfortunately, when open enrollment starts and they start really publicizing what's going to happen with the insurance market, every doctor and every independent doctor in this country is going to feel the heat. Because I can guarantee you that people, if they do keep their insurance, if they can afford that, they're not going to come to the doctor's office anymore, or very, very rarely, because they can't afford to do it. So that's going to ripple through the medical economy. And you extrapolate that to what you just said before the break, Joe, about I have no idea that 60% of the jobs that have been created are for entry-level positions. So you're saying we've gone from well-paying jobs that you can support your family, put a little in the bank, you know, go on vacation. Those types of jobs are few and far between. Am I reading that correctly?
You're reading it absolutely correctly. And I think when you talk about the bigger picture and you talk about a little history, you go back to the 1950s when a household had one breadwinner and the father was the main support of the household and the mom stayed home and raised the children.
Mm-hmm.
Then in the 60s, we saw the need for two jobs in the household. The mother started to go to work along with the father to supplement what was needed to raise the family. And then as we got into the 70s and 80s, we started seeing the main breadwinner work a part-time job and the mother work not only a full-time job, but work on the weekends when she was off as well, simply because what the two were earning in the jobs that they had, they weren't enough to maintain the standard of living and allow them to raise their family in a manner in which was acceptable. So we went from one breadwinner to two breadwinners to two breadwinners with two jobs to now to the point where no matter how much you earn, if you're the average American, it's just not enough.
Exactly. And we're talking about after the Affordable Care Act, people getting multiple jobs and still not having enough.
Right? Exactly.
So,
right.
I mean, you're basically a debt slave. And it's amazing. You did, in the beginning of the show, you quoted the student loan debt. Yet you
yes,
hear
it is.
All these
$1.2 billion.
I'm sure that has been contributed by those for-profit universities that have come online. I mean, you can't turn on the TV if you're at home during the day and not see one of these techs, you know, is going to teach you how to be a medical assistant or whatever the job they're trying to push on you, where there's no jobs to be had after. So you've incurred this debt. You've got no job to get when you come out of it, and there's your additional defaults. But the government's been pushing that for the past, what, 10 years now? 8 years or so?
Absolutely.
And, you know, training people for trade jobs and that sort of thing, this is not an economy that's supporting those types of jobs. So my impression, I think there's a lot of ways you can control people. One is fear. One is by, you know, they're not healthy and they can't afford to stay healthy. And the other is putting them in debt. There's nothing worse than owing somebody something and not being able to pay it. That is an undue stress that the government is actually, and the Congress, I would say, have actively been pushing. And like home ownership, I remember when Bush came into power, the Bush 2, and how it was all about owning a home. That was the thing that people needed to do, whether or not they could afford it. So how much, in your opinion, well, I don't know. This is a double-edged question. Is it the people that wanted something for nothing, or was it the government pushing programs and creating programs as the carrot to make people want something they shouldn't want?
I think the honest and true answer to that question, Elena, is it was both.
No,
I think
honest.
Both have to equally take responsibility for how this turned out. I really do.
Well, with that in mind, as an individual, forget the government, because I agree with you. If you can't control your own wants and needs and you can't be disciplined, then this is what you get. But for those folks who are waking up and who want to take their power back, what is the first three things that you think people should do to pull themselves out of this type of system?
Well, I think first off, people have to take an honest assessment of where they are and why they're there. And I think once you understand the problem, and then you can certainly look at a workable solution, you know, to get out of the certain situation that you're in that's not good. You know, as I said in a previous show with you, I think the first thing we do is we take a look at our talent. You know, what talent do we have outside of our education, which, you know, may not be exactly what is needed now in this economy at this given time, but we take a look at our talent aside of our vocation, and we have to assess what it is and how we can apply it to what's currently evolving in the marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I defined for you in our last show, but I'll do it one more time. you know, how do I pinpoint the talent that an individual possesses? And I look at talent and individual as anything you do consistently on an extraordinary level. And I think we all do things consistently on an extraordinary level, although we may not even be aware of the talent we have outside of our current field of endeavor. That's the first thing we do.
And the second?
I think the second thing we do is we take a look at, you know, what we can do versus what we're unable to. You know, there are things, there are choices, there are alternatives we have to any situation. They may not be exactly the ones that we would like to pursue, but nevertheless, that they are there to us to certainly evaluate and look to as to a solution. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't focus on the things we can't do because they really don't matter. Whether we can do them today or do them tomorrow is really irrelevant. We have to look at what we can do today, what is realistic we can accomplish today, and how best do we move forward from a difficult situation. And I think everyone's situation individually is different, and everyone's solution to what needs to be done is different. So those are the three things I think we all have to look at if we're going to change the current situation and circumstances which we're involved in.
Well, each one of those is a movement towards personal responsibility. You're not depending on a program.
Absolutely.
You're not depending on a handout. You're not depending on a monthly disbursement to you from a source that's not you. And I think that makes perfect sense to me. I think, again, this is a medical show, so we concentrate on the medical side of this, but I see a growing number of physicians doing exactly what you just described. I'm one of those, that I had to really explore what my value was, what my talents really are, aside from just being a doctor, but just as an entrepreneur and as a futurist, as seeing where this is going and not being a victim. And once you start doing that, and everybody does it, I think we'll be in a much better position to handle whatever's coming.
Well, I think you're doing three things. Number one, you're a physician. Number two, you're a humanitarian. And number three, you're a businesswoman.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the three hats you are wearing, whether you realize that or not. But I see the three hats you're wearing because I know what you're trying to do and, more importantly, how you're trying to do it. And lastly, why you're trying to do it. That's who you are.
Well, it's a liberating thing to actually pursue that instead of waiting for the next insurance scam to come online where they don't pay you. That changed for me has been the difference between wanting to stay in practice and wanting to leave it. So I can imagine if you look at every other profession, whether you're a teacher or construction or whatever the field that you're pursuing, if you've got a roadblock with a regulation or whatever they're doing to you, what Joe is saying is actually your way out is to withdraw your consent, to actually go back to the basics and what made you love what you're doing and figure out a way to pursue it that way. I think that's the ultimate advice of the show, and it always has been that way, I think.
Well, I think two things you have to look at. You're either part of the problem or you're part of the solution. Which are you?
That's a really good way to put it. That's very black and white. I mean, either you get it or you don't. And it takes effort to become part of the solution, but it's the best thing you'll ever do. And you'll wake up, I think, in a different frame of reference, where whatever they're bringing at you, whatever they're telling you how awful it is on TV, you, just like you described in those 10 points, what they say in reality are two different things. If you can understand the foundation and the basis of something, it immunizes you against all of the bad decisions that you could possibly make out of fear, out of frustration, or just by giving up. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, I think the last thing is you have to ask yourself a very hard question. Are you willing to make a difference if you're given an opportunity? I think each and every one of us has to answer that and answer it individually and answer it honestly.
That's a big question. That's a lot of introspection to come up with an answer for that that's honest. But, I think most people don't have the time. Or maybe they don't even know anymore how to actually look within, because it's all about the shiny thing, about being distracted, about pursuing the next big, story or meme out there. That's completely changed from when, we were children. I don't think we thought about things the same way I think we actually thought. I don't think people think anymore. They just do. They don't know why they're doing it or why they think something. Even if it's against their interest, they're all in all of a sudden, which makes really no sense to me. And that sounds like the economies work that same way. Just all these bubbles over and over again with no foundation to them. You know, can you use that analogy to describe what's going on economically?
Well, we live in an illusionary economic cycle, and you touched upon it in these various bubbles. They're false wealth, they're not lasting, and at the end of the day, we have to go back and do it over.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, again, it comes back to, can we take responsibility for who we are and what we do and what we're trying to accomplish in life? You know, we blame a lot of people for things that we do that don't work out. But at the end of the day, an individual has to take the responsibility for who they are and what they do and whether they succeed or fail. I think we live in a society, honestly, Elena, where we do too much finger pointing. We try to put the blame upon people for things that don't work out for whatever reason. And at the end of the day, we can't reflect upon what we did wrong or what we could have done differently that might have had a different outcome. So we're always looking for a scapegoat. We're looking for a reason to justify, you know, why we didn't do the things that were important or why we didn't succeed. We got to get away from that.
I agree. On that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare, but for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose, and with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. Today we're speaking with economist Mr. Joseph Meyer. He's the president of Meyer & Associates and produces StraightMoneyAnalysis.com, which has a monthly newsletter, which I think people need to actually go and look and subscribe to, because it's all about having a foundation, not the drama that the media wants you to fall into because your brain turns off, but some facts, some actual facts that let you learn about what the problem is, become a critical thinker, and extrapolate what works for you. Nothing works for everybody. There's no medicine that works for everybody, no surgery that works for everybody. It's about the individual, and what we're talking about this morning is how you analyze your situation, how you formulate a technique or a plan to get yourself out of whatever trouble you're in, or more importantly, formulate a plan so you don't get yourself into trouble and pursue your life, which is what we have in this world. And if you're not happy, then instead of doing the same thing, expecting a different result, it's time to make a change. Now, you know, Joseph, we talked a lot about the bigger picture. Let's talk about practical stuff now.
Okay.
I'm interested in, as an consumer in buying gold and silver, because I think that the dollar is going to go south. If not, if it hasn't already done it, it's going to come out pretty quickly that it's on its way. Who do you buy from? Who do you recommend? I mean, I'm sure stuff online is not necessarily all
cracked up. I knew you were going to ask me that question.
You know it.
All right, let me give you the name and number of one of the leading bullion dealers in the United States. They're headquartered out of Minneapolis, Minnesota. They're named Miles Franklin, and if your listening audience has a paper and pencil, I'll give you their number.
Okay.
1-800-822-8080. That's 1-800-822-8080.
And so you can... I mean, obviously, people shouldn't buy things and get a certificate. They want the actual physical gold or silver, correct?
Well, they sell the physical gold and silver.
Okay.
They sell the coin and they sell the bullion, and they've got some very knowledgeable salespeople that you can speak to. And again, everyone's situation is different. Everyone's budget is different, but I've known of them for a number of years. They're very reputable, and people, you know, have given me very good feedback that have dealt with them, so I know people will certainly be well taken care of if they call them.
Excellent. And in terms of banking, because, you know, people are probably reading about Deutsche Bank and the fact that it's about to topple, and, you know, I don't know if it's Saudi Arabia. Somebody withdrew their funds from it. And that's a pretty big bank in Europe. I think it's got its fingers, like they all do, in all countries.
Deutsche Bank, as you know, is the largest bank in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they do have a large footprint all through the European Union. So you're absolutely right. They're a major player as to what's going on all through Europe. Yes, they are.
If they fail, what would that mean to an American citizen? Does it affect us?
Well, banks in Europe and banks in the U.S. do business, and they're interconnected on many, many different levels. And I think if we do see a bank failure with Deutsche Bank, which I'm hoping doesn't happen, you know, I'm often asked if they're going to be bailed out, who would bail them out? Would it be the German Central Bank, the Bundesbank? You know, could it be the IMF? Could it be the ECB? Who would step in? Well, I think we can rule out the Bundesbank stepping in and bailing them out for many, many reasons, and I question at this point whether the ECB would get involved. But typically when we see banks like this in trouble, it's been the IMF in the past that has stepped forward with a lifeline of additional capital to keep the bank afloat until such time that it can resolve its solvency issues. But, you know, the bigger problem, I think, when we talk about what's going on in Europe is these negative interest rates. As you know, the ECB bank, the 18 nations that use the euro all have negative interest rates. We also have negative interest rates in Japan, Denmark, Sweden, Switzerland. So, you know, there has been talk on many levels whether or not we would see negative interest rates here in the U.S. I seriously doubt, Elena, we will ever see serious consideration for negative interest rates here in the U.S. because that would be the final nail in the coffin of the U.S. dollar being a world reserve currency. But I do think if this economy continues to weaken, and I believe it will do so as we come into year-end and more importantly the early part of 2017, I do think at some point we will see serious consideration to going forward and certainly implementing a QE4. That I do believe is reality, yes.
So that's only going to make the dollar, you know, less valuable if another QE, right? I mean, at one point, do we have to take our medicine and just start putting value in our dollar as opposed to continually removing it?
Well, again, I think if you understand history and you go back to the formation of the U.S. dollar as a world reserve currency in late 1944, and as you know, we were on the gold standard from 1944 through 1971, 27 years. And then August 15, 1971, Richard Nixon, by executive order, took us off the gold standard. We've been off it ever since. So I think people lose sight of that. We were really only on the gold standard 27 years, but we've been off of it now 45.
Mm-hmm.
And what has happened since then, if you go back and you take a look at the national debt, and I think we spoke about this in a previous show, hard to believe when John Kennedy was president, we had a national debt of about $288 billion. We really didn't get to the first $1 trillion in national debt till 1980 with Ronald Reagan. And as you know, through the periods that followed after that, we added to it almost on a regular basis. The cost of Vietnam was very, very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And most people don't realize how much money was really spent on that war that lasted over a decade. And then you take a look at what happened in the late 1990s and through the early part of 2000, and certainly what's taken place over the last 8 years. And, you know, we're approaching $20 trillion national debt. You know, at some point it's going to become unserviceable. It's going to become unpayable. And at some point, you know, where are we going to raise the capital we need to fund the budgetary requirements of the U.S. when we can no longer borrow money from foreigners and into our markets? That's the biggest problem I see moving forward. We're coming to the end of the line.
And, you know, obviously then the Internet, a lot of people talk about that's the whole goal of this, is to create chaos so you can create a currency or a new currency. And as a global reset, because everybody's unsustainable, everybody's priced out, they can't afford to pay their debt, then that becomes, potentially for some folks, the answer. Is that something that you, not necessarily that you foresee, but theoretically, that would be something that would drive something like that, right?
Well, I think when you look at the accumulation of trillion-dollar-a-year budgetary deficits, which we've done now for several years, I think everyone agrees this cannot continue. I think when you look at what is going on, certainly globally, in Southeast Asia, what's been going on with Japan, as you know, their economy's been in trouble since the late 1970s and 1980s, and basically they have tried every stimulus possible to revive the economy, and it's failed, and they now have negative interest rates. And Japan is certainly, I think, a model for what we've done here in the U.S. You know, mm-hmm. First they had a very strong housing market, then a very strong equity market, and then both of them collapsed. We had the Japanese market almost 39,000 in the Nikkei, and it's just a little over 10,000 now. So I think when you look at what has happened once the market collapsed, you know, 25, quarter of a century later, the market's nowhere near recovering.
Mm-hmm.
Housing market's been in a difficult position now for many, many decades. It's not turned around. And I've often said that I thought we here in the U.S. would follow the Japanese model, and it looks like that's exactly what we're doing. You know, we had a housing bubble and it popped, and housing never recovered, although the equity markets continued to go to higher valuations. And now we're waiting on the equity markets to finally pop, you know, if we've not already seen the highs, which I believe possibly we could have seen. We could be on the cusp of entering a very nasty, drawn-out and prolonged equity bear market that surprisingly could last many, many years.
You know, I'm, as a layperson, to me, the way you would solve this is not to give the people or the entities that don't create anything any more money, but to actually give people jobs, real wealth, that they would actually buy stuff and run the economy or restart the economy with real wealth. You know, is that, I mean, that to me makes a lot more sense instead of taxing everybody more, taking more money out of their pockets so they can't buy anything. Why don't we do the opposite for a change, or we stop regulating, encourage entrepreneurship?
Well, I think when you look at the regulations that we've had, small business regulation, it's never been more excessive than it's
terrible.
Been, you know, over the last decade.
Oh, yeah.
90%, and I know you know this statistic, of all jobs created in this economy we're in are created by small business.
Yeah.
small business is regulated to the point where it's just very, very difficult to run a small business and be regulation compliant. Very difficult to borrow and raise capital for a small business. Very difficult to compete in a market when you're going up against foreign-made products. So there's many, many things that are wrong with the economy that need to be fixed. Can we create jobs? Can we bring manufacturing back to the shores of America? Can we once again, you know, be proud of American-made products? I think the answer is yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got a very talented work pool. We've got more highly capable, highly sophisticated and knowledgeable people all sitting around waiting for someone to create a job. And when people can make more money on unemployment insurance than they can currently earn in the job market working these minimum wage, no benefit jobs,
mm-hmm.
I ask you, what's the incentive for them to go out and try to do something differently? It's just not there.
I agree. I mean, I think the argument was made, you know, 3 or 4 years ago when they kept extending the time that people could take you know, benefits from unemployment, that
well,
wasn't a stimulation for the economy.
Right when you say that, because there used to be a time limit on how long you could draw down unemployment, and once it was exhausted, there were no more benefits.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, unemployment's been extended several times. You've got people now making a career on drawing down unemployment benefits. It has to stop.
I agree. And disability and anything that the government can hand out, then people are, but they don't realize when that spigot turns off, they are on the hook. On that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medical on Call. Welcome back to Medicine on Call. We're having, I think, a very important conversation with Mr. Joseph Meyer. You should go to straightmoneyanalysis.com and read about him and also all of the work he's doing and get his newsletter, Straight Money Analysis newsletter, so that you can be informed and stop taking what you're told as gospel. Because we're having a conversation that's like a parallel universe of reality versus, I don't know what they're trying to push on us except to feed us pablum, everything's awesome, let's just double down because everything's great, let's just do more of the same. Who in their right mind, except for somebody who is taking these benefits, who thinks they're the end all and be all, probably making more money on the benefits than they've ever had in their life, that should not be the people, they should not be the people who run the future of our country. That's all I'm saying. And from our standpoint, Joe, what about, I talked about the banks a bit, but I want to again re-explore credit unions. As a business owner, I'm not really familiar with credit unions, unfortunately. But can businesses also move their business to a credit union, or is it just an individual pursuit?
Yes, they can move them to a credit union, and I think every small business should look into the benefits of being part of a credit union.
Okay.
And I think as an alternative to what you're doing currently with your bank, I think there are some advantages.
What do you think? What's the main advantages that you see?
Well, you can pick up free checking, free savings. You know, they'll open these accounts for free if you keep a minimum balance in them. And
mm-hmm.
I think a lot of times, if you do need a loan for whatever purpose, you can certainly secure that loan at much better rates.
Well, that's a big deal. Because I know that from a small business standpoint, a lot of these for-profit loan companies have popped up, but you're paying some serious interest rates just to get them, or you're paying daily. You know, you're doing a lot of things to make it work because the banks won't give you money, but a credit union actually sounds like a much better alternative because you actually are a member. You have somebody, you're part of a group or a whole as opposed to just being a customer. That's,
yes,
is that a win? Okay, that's a good way to look at it then. I just want to ask a question about derivatives because I'm not exactly sure what they are, and credit default swaps and all those, you know, buzzwords. What are they, and are those the things that started this cascade, in your opinion?
Well, derivatives are a bet on an asset class price in the future. That's what a derivative is. It's a counterparty risk security. And what it is, it's a way to offset the risk that banks and institutions take by being in markets that exhibit extreme volatility. And in the case of Deutsche Bank, they have outstanding derivatives in the trillions of dollars. A lot of them are interest rate sensitive. A lot of them are tied to very volatile markets. And if we start to see interest rates go up, I think the biggest problem is going to look at these credit default swaps, which are bets, as you know, on mortgages, which these institutions have underwritten going sour. And I think that's the greatest risk to the market as we move forward, Elena.
How do we get in a position, or it seems like it's like going to a casino, you betting crazy, you losing, and then someone giving your money back. There's no risk in this.
Well, we utilize leverage in all these markets, and when you talk about the leverage being utilized in these markets of interest, they're now very, very excessive, and we've reached a point now where these markets have literally stopped going up in a straight line. You've got to remember, when we talk about interest rate sensitive derivatives, we've had interest rates falling for over 30 years, which was them being on one side of the market, which was very, very beneficial. And now we're seeing interest rates having made a bottom and start to move back up, although they've moved back up very, very slowly. And the problem is, will these interest rates accelerate and move back up much more rapidly than anyone expects? You know, that risk is not at this point, I believe, been priced into the market. That is, I think, the catalyst for the unwinding and the deflating of the stock market bubble. And once it starts down, as I've often said, it's not a question of how far it goes down, but how fast.
Well, the whole thing to me doesn't seem... Obviously, it's not fair, because if
it's
you're putting money...
It's a house of cards, Elena. That's as simply as I can state it. It's a house of cards that's going to fall. It's not a question of if, it's a question of when.
So I'm all about people taking their power back. If people, you know, on the whole, were to say, I'm not going to put my money anymore in a bank. It's volatile. I don't even know if they're going to be existing anymore. And he put them in... on a credit union, sorry. Would that be a way for people to protect their, and you know, put in gold and silver, et cetera? You just withdraw your consent from the system. Is that a way to protect yourself from that unwinding? Or will they start sliming the credit unions and try to take them over?
Well, you know, to answer your question, I think we all have to say to ourselves, are we going to continue to be part of the system, and are we going to continue to be part of what the system has outlined that they want us to do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we all have to make a decision of who we are, what we're doing, why we're doing it, and I think lastly and more importantly, as I've often said, how can we do what we're doing and do it better? I think at the end of the day, the marketplace is the arbiter of our talent. The marketplace determines its value. And we have to get back to putting our faith in what we do, how we do it. You know, do we have something we can offer the market at the end of the day that has true value? There's so much in the marketplace that I see, just from my perspective, it doesn't have any value.
Agreed.
You know, you say to yourself, why are these people doing what they're doing? How can they make any money from what they're doing? Because I just don't see it. But for whatever reason, these people go on and they're successful, although I don't agree with it, and they make a lot of money. But at the end of the day, are they making this a better country? Are they making this a better place for us all? You know, are they doing the things that we'd expect one to do who makes a lot of money and achieves a lot of success? At the end of the day, what did they bring to the bottom line? Again, I don't see it.
Oh, I definitely don't see it. But, you know, my question actually is pretty specific on this. If more people withdraw their consent from medicine, we're doing it every day. That's a direct primary care cash-based practice. That's how doctors are moving towards that. But if people take their money and put them in gold or silver, in a credit union, will that in itself, if that's a choice you're making, is that something that you would say, hey, I think that's a good choice to make, or does it matter?
I think it does matter. I think it's the first step. I think it's a good choice.
Okay.
I think there's nothing wrong with diversifying, you know, where you keep your assets. You certainly don't want to keep them all in one place.
Okay.
So is it ideal to have money with a bank? Yes. Is it ideal to have money with a credit union? Absolutely. You know, should you have some money in stocks? Of course you should. Should you have money in bonds? Of course you should. You know, should you put money into your career? Should you put money into your own business? Yes, you should.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have the power to control what happens to you? I think we have more power in our individual lives to control what happens to us than we realize.
I absolutely agree with that. And we have to believe that, though. Now, I don't think we do. Somehow, we've been taught that that's a bad thing. You should work for somebody. You should let somebody take care of you. And that's really, you need to take care of yourself at this point. I agree totally with that.
I think at the end of the day, and I know I've said this before, we all have to run our own race in life. No one can run the race we're going to run in our lifetime for us. We have to do it, and we have to do it at our pace, and we have to do it at our comfort level.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a question of who gets there first. What's important is we all cross the finish line. That, at the end of the day, is what truly matters.
I couldn't have said it better. How can people, we have a minute left, how can people reach you, Joe?
You can always call me directly. We're always here to take a phone call and answer any questions. Call me on 386-677-8642. Send me an email. As you know, I answer them almost immediately. Email jmeyeromm@aol.com. I'm working on the next issue of the newsletter, Elena, which will be the December 2016 issue of Straight Money Analysis.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone becomes a subscriber to the newsletter, we'll give them the back issues of the newsletter. They'll get December 2015, March 2016, June 2016, and the latest issue, which went out September 1st, the September 2016 issue. And go to the straightmoneyanalysis.com website. There's a sample issue of the newsletter that you can download and read. You can sign up for the newsletter right on the PayPal secure terminal, and we get your order. We'll certainly get you out the back issues of the newsletter. You have any questions on what we write about in the newsletter or any topics you'd like to discuss, just pick up the phone, give me a call. We're here to help in any way we can.
You're a blessing, and I want to thank you so much for being a guest. And obviously, anytime you can, you know you're welcome to come back.
Well, we thank you for the opportunity to visit with your listening audience, and it's always a pleasure to visit with you on Medicine On Call, and want you to know I'm always here for your listening audience to help in any way we can, Elena. I truly mean that.
Thank you, Joe. And thank you for listening to Medicine On Call. Have a great week.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.